what are the advantages that this approach can provide to a farmer that is putting it in practice. And it goes in three areas, as I said. The first one is a consequence of the other ones, which is a yield of milk increase, but this is just a consequence of a better health. The second one is enhanced calcium phosphorus metabolism, as I explained before. We can touch on that briefly. And then the third one is strengthen immunity. So with that, we say yes. So YES, just as a way to remind people how this works.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, Smax Tech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together.
Hello and welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, I'm happy to welcome to the show Ignacio Artavia. Ignacio, welcome.
Hello. Yes. Thank you, Barry, for having me this time with you. I've been watching some of your videos. Always very interesting. And it's a pleasure to be here for my first time.
Ignacio, where are you joining us from today?
I'm based in Belgium, so okay. Close by to Brussels. I live here since 2 years ago, but I'm actually originally from Costa Rica. It's been like 8 years or nine that I'm living in Europe by now. I was moving. Okay. I came here for my master's, then I stayed working a little longer, then I moved here to Belgium, and yeah, it's been a journey.
Yeah. We have to come back to that for a few questions. But first of all, I guess you currently work as the global manager for ruminants at DSM Firmenich. Can you explain a little bit about that company?
DSM, before being DSM Firmenich, DSM was a company that was, the name comes from Dutch state mines back in like more than 100 years ago. It used to be a company working on mines, then it developed into different topics. Back in the day, in around the 90s, they purchased Roche vitamins. Some people know Roche Pharmaceutical. They used to have a vitamin branch. This was bought by DSM, and then the company got into animal nutrition. So our company was, until now, most known for the vitamins part. So we're one of the biggest providers of vitamins around the world. And also we have a branch that we call Performance Solutions. So there we focus more on more specific solutions. Some of the most known are Mycofix in ruminants or Biofix, as they call it in the US, and other enzymes, essential oils, and then different solutions for ruminants.
Your cattle are constantly threatened by the exposure of mycotoxins in feed. Now you can know if mycotoxins are present in your feed and what you should do about it. DSM Firmenich offers a range of analytical services to assess the mycotoxin contamination and solutions to combat mycotoxins. Don't let mycotoxins contaminate your performance. Visit dsmfirmenich.com/mycotoxin-survey to learn more. That's dsm-firmenich.com/mycotoxin-survey.
I'm curious, how did you end up in this role? So you're managing a big product line at the global level. Mm-hmm. You might be a little bit younger than me, it looks like. How did you find your way here? Did you grow up in agriculture?
Yeah, I'm 31 years old.
Okay.
I guess the story is it's not very... I don't know how I got here, but I come from a farming background. My parents are beef farmers, also coffee farmers. I also have a shared passion for coffee and cows. I currently have a little project also with coffee roasting that is going on, but
nice.
So first of all, I'm passionate about agriculture. I think that in agriculture, we can do so many things to bring opportunities and development to the rural world, which is, I think, I'm a rural person more than a city person. So that's, I studied agriculture in Costa Rica, a university focused on sustainable agriculture with a strong focus on business as well. And then I came to, I actually worked in the US for 1 year in a dairy farm, also processing cheese. It was a farm called Meadow Creek Dairy in Virginia, Appalachian Mountains. It was a nice time.
Nice.
I was really interested in making cheese and also milking cows before I would do any more technical role. I wanted to get my hands a little bit more into the work. After that, I realized I wanted to do a master's in animal nutrition, go back to academia. Not sure for how long, but I knew I wanted to further build on what I had studied, but focused on animal nutrition. And then I went to the Netherlands, to Wageningen, and also I did part of my studies in France. So this time in Wageningen was really focused on animal nutrition, and they're quite well respected as a university, and they were collaborated a lot with DSM back in that time. So I did an internship for them looking at antioxidant status in dairy cows across Europe. We did a big survey looking at beta-carotene and vitamin E levels in blood, and then we came up with a publication on that. And we showed some differences between supplementation and so on and the potential impacts it had in the health of the animals we were surveying. Then I worked for Biomin, which is a company, an Austrian company that was purchased by DSM. And this company was very focused on mycotoxins. I became their product manager for mycotoxins coming out of university. And back in that time, ruminants was not the most important area for our company, but definitely an area for growth. And so they hired a person specific to ruminants to focus on developing the story and developing materials to help the farmers understand first how to recognize their problem on mycotoxins and then to draw a solution for it. So that was my work to create awareness. It was really nice. I really liked it. I did work 3 years on that. And it felt like I did a PhD on mycotoxins, although it was just work. But I mean, it was really deep dive and was a great experience. Then then I moved from this role to take care of the whole category for ruminants together with a team. I'm just one more in a big team of people. Yeah.
Well, it's maybe appropriate that Costa Rican trying to survive the winter in Belgium that we talk about vitamin D, maybe.
Yeah.
So can you remind us, just for anybody in the audience who it's been a while since they've, you know, taken a nutrition class or something, why is vitamin D important in the first place? Like, why do we need it? Why do cows need it?
So my first contact with this topic was when I did a blood test in the middle of the summer in Austria. I like to do rock climbing, and sometimes it gets so hot, you take the shirt off and you're on the rock. So I was really having a lot of sun. And even though I got my results and I was low on blood vitamin D, so I started wondering, like, what is really relevant for this, and why, how can I be noticing that I'm deficient on it? So this is just personal experience of more translating it to human, but I was really feeling like a little bit of low energy during my day, and I started supplementing, and then I recognized that it would get better. And then whenever I get supplementing, I would go down again. On overall energy during the day. But this is not scientific at all. The more scientific areas that we know in ruminants or in bovines, cattle, that vitamin D plays a role is two main areas. One that was the most known back in the past, and it's the metabolism of calcium and phosphorus. So it plays a role in different parts of the whole in the set of organs that control this metabolism. But the most important of those is the absorption of calcium through the intestine. So if you have a deficiency of vitamin D, you're going to be challenging to take up the nutrients that are going through the through the feed. The second area of impact that we have mostly explored in the last years, there's a graph where you see like all of the publications of vitamin D on immunity, and then it goes like this right around a very important period in time, which is COVID.
Yeah, okay.
When we started realizing that vitamin D played an important role on it, and it has to do with immune activation also moderation of the response of the immune system and overall gene expression of genes related to the immune response of the animal, from phagocytosis to balance of the redox balance and so on. But these are, I think, for people working with cattle, the two main areas, the calcium phosphorus balance and the immunity one.
Yeah, I think maybe starting about 20 years ago, when sort of the genomics technology was exploding, people started to report that the vitamin D receptor was active in a lot more cell types than just like bone cells and the gut cells, right? They're like, it's doing a lot of things in the immune cells as well. And we didn't really know at the time what that meant. But hopefully, yeah, we can get into some more of that here in this discussion. So I mentioned sunlight. People think about vitamin D as the sunlight vitamin, right? So when we think about livestock, how do you think about that? Are there times where, you know, sunlight really is giving sufficient vitamin D that the animals don't need to be consuming it? Or how do you think about that, especially with dairy cattle?
Yeah. So that one of the things that, like, we in general as a society, we are still low in awareness of the relevance of vitamin D. One of the things that people can remember the best is that we synthesize it with sunlight. And that is true. So there are two main ways in which we generally would get the vitamin D is through the sun. And then it's synthesized and eventually it becomes D3, vitamin D3. Or we can also take it from the food in the form of vitamin D3. Yes, it is true that that if you don't have enough sun, these levels that you will be able to obtain are going to be relatively low. But also sometimes, even as I give the example, even if you're under sun exposure, you might still not be at what today we call optimal levels. But also, what is an optimal level? It has been changing the more we're understanding what can you get when you lift your levels of vitamin D. We did some work here because I should share that we work with this ingredient 25-4-2-3, which is a more further source of vitamin D. So I can re-explain that. Going back to the vitamin D3. The vitamin D3 that either can come from the sun or from the diet, it has to go through the liver and it has to be converted into another molecule that is called 25-OHD3. And this 25-OHD3 is usually when you take a blood sample of yourself or your cows, you're going to be taking a blood sample, and this is what you measure because it's the most stable molecule that you measure in the animal. However, this is not yet the one that will be binding into all the receptors that you were talking about. The one that does bind to those has to go through the kidneys, and then it will be converted into 1,25-OHD3. Once this one reaches into all the receptors, then it will have an effect. So it's already on a hormonal mode. So even though sometimes we are exposed a lot of time to the sun and we have maybe a supplement of vitamin D3 that exceeds the requirements or the guidelines, you might still not be able to increase the 25-OHD on your blood. And why is that? It's because the liver has a sort of bottleneck whereby even if you triple the dosage of that vitamin D3, you're not able to increase the pool size of the 25 OHD3. So in the end, the animal is not able to convert it into the hormonal mode, which is the one that will have the effect. So we did some work just here recently to look at the difference between winter and summer in the whole Europe. We just launched this solution in Europe, although you have it in the US already. And we wanted to compare the difference between the winter and the summer. And yes, we saw a difference, but we're talking about 5 to 10 nanograms per milliliter of difference. So let's say in winter, the average of all cows, although, you know, it's many countries, but the average was around 35 nanograms per milliliter. And during the summer, it went up to 47 nanograms per milliliter. So the increase, it did happen, but it was not where we needed. It was still far from the optimal.
Okay. And that's in a context where there's a lot more grazing, or at least outside housing, than there would be in the U.S. system, right?
Correct. Some of the countries were under grazing, but not all of them. So I can tell you that only France, in that case, and a couple of farms that we sampled in the Netherlands were part of it. And we put them all together. So there's not, we can discriminate that. We can talk about just the sun that comes through the environment. So in general, yeah, there was not a so clear benefit, although many of those animals are exposed to patches where they can take the sun.
Introducing Ultrasorb R3.0, Volac's comprehensive and complete solution to reduce the negative impact of naturally occurring toxins on ruminants. Ultrasorb R3.0 is a species-specific product designed to mitigate the effects of specific mycotoxins in the gastrointestinal tract of ruminants. Ultrasorb R3.0 also offers lipopolysaccharides binding capabilities. Endotoxins such as LPS can contribute to inflammation in ruminants, with energy partitioned to mount an immune response instead of production. Learn more about Ultrasorb R3.0 at volac.com.
Is there, in terms of blood 25-hydroxy D3, which, as you said, is usually what's monitored in humans or animals, is there a threshold that's considered a sign of adequacy in a cow?
I think that I would also like to cite Corwin, because he, on the webinar that he, that, sorry, on the recording that he did with you, he touched on this topic. What happens here is that we see, let's say you have a scale like this that says deficient, insufficient, adequate, and then optimal. And yep. Then you see that the lowest we go, the lowest in years you're talking also. So, for example, we define that deficient was deficient around 1994, when we realized that rickets was associated with very low vitamin D levels. Then when we were not yet aware about the impact of vitamin D on the immunity, we were talking about being adequate only to ensure that at least you have adequate absorption of calcium in the blood. And there, we're talking about 40 to 60 nanograms per milliliter.
Okay.
40 to 60. So say the average of cows that we had in Europe under that survey was at 35. So most of the cows are not even there for the calcium homeostasis requirement. And then the work that I would like to cite that was really, really, that has really given us the wealth of information that we have today on vitamin D has been done in University of Florida, where they started to look more into the immune benefits and how much was needed for you to have the maximum, say, immune response in first in vitro and also in vivo. And those optimal levels are 100 nanograms per milliliter. So I said rickets is below 10, you're already at risk of rickets. For calcium phosphorus, we're talking about 40 to 60. And then for optimal immunity, above 100 nanograms per milliliter. So as you can see, our survey here in Europe was quite far from the levels that are required.
And if anybody's interested in this, Ignacio referenced a podcast with Dr. Corwin Nelson from the University of Florida. So if you're interested, you can look up that episode and there's some more detail there. So Ignacio, I know probably nearly anybody who's listening to this that works with dairy herds, particularly formulating diets, the vast majority of people are feeding vitamin D. We've had vitamin D available for probably about 100 years to feed to cattle. And it's one of the three vitamins that pretty much we always teach is it should be fed to ruminants. So why are we talking about this more? Should we just feed more of that, or what, you know, what's the interest in this in your company?
So indeed, vitamin D3 is being used, and of course it's better than nothing.
Right.
That's why we supplement it, and that's why there are recommendations for it. When we compare it, for example, with the more available version, which we call Heidi, is the name, but the molecule is 25-OHD3. When we provide it more available, we increase the levels that can be seen in the blood. But before I go there, every time that we do like a trial to compare what is the advantage of giving the D3 or the more available version, we always use it against the control, which is vitamin D3, because it's the common practice, right?
Yep.
And so the first thing that we're able to see is simply that the blood levels are going to be higher than if you give the same international units or milligrams of that vitamin D source. Okay. So what happens with D3? What is the limitation when we say that you can only feed it to a certain amount is that, as I said, it has to go through the liver, and the liver has a limitation or a bottleneck and a limit too much to the extent of how much it can convert from D3 to the 25-OHD3. That bottleneck we have more or less identified that is around the 40,000 international units per cup per day, or 1 milligram of vitamin D3. Yeah, which is... which is also more or less the common recommendation here in Europe. I think in the US you have no limitation in terms of how much vitamin D3 you can supplement to your cows. Here we have, we have in this University of Florida trials, they tested, for example, providing these 40,000 international units or three times that, either with D3 or with Heidi or 25-OHD3.
Okay.
And there was no advantage when you provided this extra supplementation in vitamin D3 when you gave one or three times the dosage, which means that, which makes it clear that this bottleneck is there. There's no way to pass through that. Some people might wonder, is that because the livers are, you know, at risk, like most of the livers of the cows during transition. But in general, this is not, we have not associated this to only sick or challenged cows, rather to, in general, most cows, right? So then with Heidi, you have not this limitation. You can provide 1 milligram or you can provide 3 milligrams. You will see those levels of 25-OHD3 going up in the concentration when you take a blood sample. So that's the first advantage, let's say, when we talk about the blood levels. But in the end, the farmer is more interested on the consequence of that, not simply on bringing the levels up.
Yeah, I guess let's get into that. Like what would motivate, say, a dairy producer to invest in feeding this more active form of vitamin D? The 25-hydroxy, the Heidi, is it, do you talk to them about expecting to see decreased milk fever? And then maybe some farms would say, well, we don't have that anymore, really. What else would you anticipate, or why would this be worth feeding?
We have done an explanation by three key points, like what are the advantages that this approach can provide to a farmer that is putting it in practice. And it goes in three areas, as I said. The first one is a consequence of the other ones, which is a yield of milk increase, but this is just a consequence of a better health. The second one is enhanced calcium phosphorus metabolism, as I explained before. We can touch on that briefly. And then the third one is strengthened immunity. So with that, we say yes. So YES, just as a way to remind people how this works. So I will start with the enhanced calcium phosphorus metabolism, because it's the one that was most popular since the last 40 years or so, when we were still challenging on how to address hypocalcemia. And this was there was a lot of work done by the University of Florida on this topic. I think it's something inherited from the swine and poultry industry, where they have some challenges with the calcium absorption, with the eggs, and also the bone formation. So when we took this, or when the scientists took all the research that was done on poultry and swine, they said, okay, how could this be applied to dairy cows? And so we started by looking at the calcium phosphorus story, and indeed it can help. But the thing is that we have two separate realities, and it's something that we had to face when we were bringing this launch of this product to Europe. Is that in Europe, we don't have so much DCAT strategies or anionic salt strategies to address clinical or subclinical hypocalcemia for a multitude of reasons, because, you know, I'm quite young, so I'm not on the age of the people that was working on trying to introduce that. But a lot of people had a lot of headaches with trying to introduce it. With managing the pHs and so on, because here the farm sizes are around 200 cows. Well, it depends. France is around, I think the average is 100, Netherlands 140, and so on. So you struggle to have a close-up group where you can really take care of the managing the anionic salts. So here there was the potential interest whether this could help address the hypocalcemia risk, because they kind of gave up, a lot of them, with the anionic salts, which is not the case in Latin America, where I work the most, and with my colleagues in the US. And it also combines a bit with what Corwin Nelson did. So they tried to use anionic salt strategies in Latin square, positive and negative anionic salts, and then vitamin D3 or Heidi. And we see that with Heidi, there is you don't impede the fall on the day zero of the calcium levels in the blood. However, we accelerate the recovery after that dip on the calcium levels on the day zero. And this is particularly relevant with some of the work that has been done by some researchers in the U.S. Tend to forget the name, but Jessica McCart, where she started distinguishing the different types of hypocalcemia, subclinical hypocalcemia. I think Corwin also did some work on that area. And the challenge is actually to get the cows to quickly go back on the calcium level. So what Heidi can do is it really can increase the capacity of the animal to absorb back calcium from the feed, from the food, and then recover those levels as fast as possible. That's the first one. Sorry for being so extensive on my replies. But the second one is then coming exactly. I like to use that particular trial, because the one that I was talking about, because in this Latin square, you could look at the effects and the significance of the effects of some of the most relevant clinical diseases. So you have clinical hypocalcemia, retained placenta, metritis and mastitis, and I think there was one, multiple diseases was the fifth. So there in that trial, you could see that you could address DCAT with a DCAT strategy. So either by using a positive or negative, in the case of negative, you could reduce the clinical hypocalcemia to zero significantly. So there we can see very clearly that if your problem is a clinical hypocalcemia, better not to count on Heidi to solve that problem when it's clinical. Better to really address it with a solution that is more targeted to that. If you want to come out quickly of that hypocalcemia status, then you can consider it. But then we also look at the effect side of the vitamin D source. And we could see that retained placenta was not impacted by DCAT, but it was impacted by the vitamin D source. The metritis as well, mastitis, and multiple diseases. So this tells us, which for me was quite interesting when I got into this topic, is that a lot of the issues that we associate to hypocalcemia, are they really coming from the hypocalcemia or the low calcium levels in the blood only? Or are they also just an inflammatory situation going on? So is the tool that we should go for more mechanical in terms of the calcium level that the animal needs to have a proper immunity, which is still relevant? Or shall we boost the immunity of the animal in other ways? So here is where I really got interested into the vitamin D side, because I learned that retained placenta was almost a consequence of the hypocalcemia, but actually we are able to address it by promoting the immunity of the animal, which was what we learned with this D3 versus high D discussion. And there we also see quite some other benefits, like improved colostrum in terms of higher immunoglobulin Gs is something that we see in most of the trials we do. And so on. And then the third benefit, which is increase on milk yield, we see an increase on milk yield in most of the trials that we have done. Around 70% of the trials have yielded more milk yield. And the explanation for this is that we modulate the immune response of the animal, we limit we make it more efficient, and then the energy demands of the animal are lower than if you would not have adequate vitamin D levels, and then we can see more available energy for putting it into milk. This is the way that we explain it.
Seems like a compelling case to at least consider this. So one question I was sitting here thinking about, why would we have this liver bottleneck? I don't know if you've thought about this before, but I think it maybe is plausible that as we selected for a more and more productive dairy cow, of course, vitamin D in milk is relatively abundant before we pasteurize. Does that make sense to you that maybe just by selecting a very productive cow, there's so much outflow of vitamin D that the liver sort of can't keep up now?
I don't really think it has to do with the breeding we've been doing, because breeding has had in ruminants, we had that effect of the breeding, but for example, in humans, where we have not particularly bred on a certain way, we also have overall deficient levels in humans. Also, we can say that the humans are spending less time outside than they were doing in the past. So, yes, I would associate it more to the fact of being outside the whole day, the cow. But maybe not so much to the breeding because of that particular point.
Yeah, that's fair.
However, I think the impact on breeding, on the immune efficiency of the animals and or to milk yield at the expense of immune rusticity and capacity to respond to diseases, there I do think, yeah. So we need to find ways to boost that immunity by a nutritional, by a management. It's my opinion.
Well, I've kind of have a unrelated question. So I'm curious, you said you've spent about 9 years in Europe now, and you mentioned rock climbing and stuff. I'm sure you've done some sightseeing. What's, if you had to answer right away, what's your favorite place you've visited in Europe?
That's a bit hard, but I tend to love the Alps. I think I like the mountains quite a lot, so I like a lot the Alps, whether the French side, the Swiss side, or even in Austria where I was. I think I really like to be having this view. I also like that because in Costa Rica we also have a lot of mountains and yep. There's no snow, but I really like just to see the horizon with the mountains like this, and that really, I have felt that in the Alps from either side. And if I have to choose one, I think it's the French side.
Okay.
The food and the Italian is true also.
Makes sense to me. They may not be the tallest mountains in the world, but they're good contenders for the most beautiful. Maybe.
Yeah, they're very steep. Let's say in Costa Rica, we have a lot of mountains, but they're all covered by vegetation. So they're more, I don't know what's the right word, but they're more erosion or, sorry. Right. So yeah, that's the place I like the most, or the region, let's say, in Europe. Yeah.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Trow Nutrition, North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
Okay, time for the three questions. First of all, what is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
I do not have like a book that I consult directly. I often just go to publications, and of course, always go to the Journal of Dairy Science. I mean, if I see a paper from the Journal of Dairy Science, it's highest on priority. But I usually do searches in this way. I also really like to keep myself more updated on the practical side, not only on the scientific side, which would be by these journals, but also I like to follow some let's say influencers in the industry. Like there are these guys by Cow Signals. They talk a lot about how to recognize how do you identify certain things that you should address to make sure the cow is comfortable.
Yep.
I really learn a lot from that. Yeah. And I have one more. There's a nutritionist very active from Canada. I forgot his name. I think you guys interviewed him. I saw him.
Daniel Scothorn?
Yeah, Daniel Scothorn. Sorry, I wrote it down and I forgot. Yeah, I really like also his practical advice. And if somebody can shoot some recommendations on the comments or something, I would go back and look for some influencing guys. I like the practical, very practical advice style.
Good. Yeah, I agree. All right. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
I'm trying to improve my French. I already took French quite well, but I'm trying to write it and read it better. So I've been diving a lot into some French books, and I got into more sort of like novels that lean towards some spirituality. And there is this one called Kilometer Zero. And it was quite nice. It's the story of a lady that is super deep into her work, and then at one point she goes to the mountains and then she discovers the local cultures with her Sherpa, and how they appreciate life, how they interpret life, and I really like that one quite much. It's a recent one that I read. Unfortunately, it's not in English because I wanted to recommend it to a few friends. But it's only in French.
Well, maybe you're meant to translate it for us.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I can't say anybody's brought that book up before, so that's a new one. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right, then the last question. In your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
If you think of our industry in general, be that working in a farm, really as directly hands-on, or working with nutrition, or being a consultant, is you really need to aim at excellence in what you do. So you need to be humble to recognize your errors, which are totally normal, and we would do them every day. The problem is not recognizing them, not correcting them, and not acknowledging them. So I think it's a bit of seeking excellence and being humble to, you know, understand that you're part of a process, that you're only getting better. And that would bring me to a second thing, is that you should aim at to just today be a little bit better than yesterday. You know, that if you're only achieved to do that, you already had a great day. And be that as a human being, somebody that helps someone on the street, or as a friend, or as a son. We need to try to be better every day. Yeah.
That's excellent. Well stated. I like that a lot. All right. Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. Ignacio, thanks so much for being on the show. I enjoyed the conversation, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
Yes. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I appreciate it very much, all your interest, and I'll be continuing to listen to your podcast. Thank you so much.
You bet. So that was our conversation with Ignacio Artavia from DSM Firmenich. And this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. So if you haven't subscribed yet or haven't liked the show, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. And if you got questions on vitamin D, 25-hydroxy D3, make sure you put some comments into the show notes so that you can get a conversation going. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.